All right, we are back from doing a little tour of the premises here, and I'd love to talk about some of this machinery. And there's some pieces of equipment out there that look pretty old and sturdy, actually. Yeah. and then some things that are kind of new. So I wrote down a lot of the names here, so I don't know. I was kind of scrawling. Tell me the size. You tell me how many square feet the whole plant is.
10,000 square foot plant.
Okay. And we were seeing the elevator. So that elevator is original?
Yes.
You were telling me it had been hazardous at times.
Yes. My father almost died on it in the early 70s. The cable snapped because back then they didn't have elevator inspections. So the cable had worn out. And it tossed him out when it snapped and the elevator landed on his foot. My grandpa picked it up and my dad crashed from the second floor to the first floor and was in intensive care for 2 weeks.
But recovered fully from that?
He basically recovered fully, but he did have issues up to his death that were actually related to his death. He had broken his leg in 15 different places. They could never rebuild it. And, you know, they should have taken the leg, but they didn't. And, he wanted to keep it, and they kept on saying this or that. And then it came down to a knee replacement that ended his life.
Oh, okay.
That was all directly related to that.
So does the elevator still kind of suit your needs? Does it work?
Oh, absolutely. You have to use it for baskets of clothes going up and down, and clothes that are finished downstairs are brought up. We've thought about changing that out to something more, it's just cumbersome to me. The elevator is a cumbersome thing. It's got to be worked on. The cables have to be replaced. Up and down all the time. And they make lifts now that can go through that space that can come up and around and, you know, in a circular motion that you don't have to constantly lift the door open because it's a heavy door. Close the door, push the buttons, and wait for somebody that's, you know, to come push the button to bring it back down. It's just one of those.
Yeah.
It's yesteryear.
It looks pretty neat, though.
Yeah. Well, as a kid, I used to ride it until my dad almost died on it. Nobody's ridden it since.
It's no longer recreational.
Nope.
Yeah. So the presses, so it's interesting to me that there are manual presses, and then there are presses that have kind of a pneumatic kind of operation. Can
Yes.
you talk about the presses that you have out there a little bit?
Well, the presses that are non-pneumatic are just what we call stompers. You're putting just your good old body into pressing the clothes with force. Your legs do a lot of the force onto the garment to create a pressed look. Pneumatics do it with air cylinders and... there's valves and all those kind of things that make it more efficient to vacuum the clothes for the steam and to keep moisture away from your actual finished product, because water's your enemy in the dry cleaning business. So,
those manual presses actually have a foot pedal that you stomp on.
Yes. And, where pneumatics is all buttons and stuff, but they, your compressor, you have to have air compressors, and you have to keep your air compressors clean because they push oil through, and a lot of your pneumatic presses are a real messy thing, and they're real cumbersome as far as working and keeping them working because they have plastic tubing that cracks, splits, and, of course, they need all kinds of moving parts. So to go with an actual old-time press, there's very few parts. They just go up and they go down. They don't have all these funky little things to them.
And I suppose you do all the repairs for those that are needed?
I do. I can repair anything in this whole place.
So there's a lot of equipment out there that helps keep clothing in the right form.
Correct.
I think that's what a lot of these do, right?
The form finishers or tensioners, as they're called nowadays.
So there are different ones for different kinds of clothing? There was something you called a pant topper?
Yes. Well, there's different, I don't know how you would say it, but it's like the... The way you look at a garment, how it's pressed from, let's say, the sleeve to its tail or its neck to its back, different things to create production in a timely manner. So you always want a flow of production. You don't want your production to take more than a minute a garment, so to say.
Oh, really?
You want to be able to go that fast. And if you're going slower than a minute a garment, you're losing money. So on average, you're trying to get a garment a minute, and I don't care if it's the laundry or the dry cleaning side.
So maybe I should kind of take it from when somebody brings laundry, something that they want clean, to the front. What's the process that they would go through? Say they didn't really have specific directions, but here's a whole pile of stuff and we need it cleaned.
Well, and that's what a lot of people do. They drop it on the counter because they're not the professional. They're looking for us to actually know what we're talking about and carry it from that point on. Now, what we do is divide it between, is this dry cleaning or is this laundry? And then you go right back to the care label. The care label will tell you, wash or dry clean. You know, dry clean only, or even a lot of garments say do not dry clean. We get garments that say do not wash and do not dry clean. You got a lot of different facets of the business that make it really a headache too, especially if you're to go too fast, or if you have people that aren't trained correctly, you end up with a lot of problems.
And does that sorting happen? There was a room that was downstairs that was sorting. Is that where all the sorting happens?
That's where all the sorting happens after the garment has been tagged. Now, the CSRs, our customer service representatives, go through the clothes best they can with the customer and try to discuss what we think is best for your garment. Of course, people always try to tell us what they think is best, but then we end up having the final say.
Okay. So it gets labeled and then taken down to the basement.
It gets categorized, so to say. And then okay. It goes to either, like I said, the laundry where it gets processed and inspected that way, or the dry clean side where it gets processed and inspected that way. And sometimes they cross. A piece will end up in dry cleaning, and then the dry cleaner will say, nope, this has to go to laundry. And the same with the laundry. Nope, this has to go to dry cleaning. And it happens daily.
So all the racks that are on the main floor, and it's often what someone comes to mind when they think about taking something to the laundry, the clothes just move around on these racks.
With this particular location, we don't use what do you call them? I don't even know the name right now. It escapes me. But a lot of our drop stores use them because that's how you get the garment to the front of the business. So okay. You're not going around looking for it. But this system that was set up here was all by numbers. And it was a numbered system where you just know and it's called a lot system. And back in the 40s, that's where it was established. But now it's conveyored dry cleaning, which is what we're going to be going back to, because barcoding tells you where your clothes are by just having to push a button on a computer. So there's less walking for your CSR to go pick it out, grab it, whatever. Now it's cross-referenced. Everything's cross-referenced with a barcode to the actual garment.
Oh, okay. And that's a system you're putting into place now?
We're putting it into place. A lot of cleaners are using it. It's automation, and it's about doing away with your productivity, so to say, or your, labor costs, because that's always a continual expense.
Okay. So we were downstairs, and there were some rooms that had kind of changed. Some have been the same all the time, and a couple have changed use. So it looks like the dry cleaning machines were always in the same spot.
The dry cleaning machines you just saw are from the 21st century. When I first started here, we used a carbon-based dry cleaning machine, which you actually dump packages of carbon in the actual fluid, and you dumped what we call diatomaceous earth in there. And you mixed all that together with some soap, and that was with what we called paint thinner. Is basically the actual fluid that we used to dry clean with. And those used to run through big, big machines that were, and it smelled, because that's back then, that's dry cleaning fluids all smelled. And back in the day, you'd come into a dry cleaning establishment, and that's what used to hit you first. The first thing when you walked into any dry cleaning establishment was the smell. Mm-hmm. And those days are gone. As you notice, you didn't smell anything.
There's no aroma out there at all.
Yeah, no residual, nothing harmful, nothing that could, cause any kind of, problem.
But I remember that smell you're talking about.
Yeah. That used to be how, growing up as a kid, it was just like, oh, yeah, I'm at my dad's work, and that was, and he'd come home, he'd smell like it, and mm-hmm. back in those days, it was real common that, you knew what that smell was, depending on what even the chemical you're using, because there's a bunch of different ones, that you knew what chemical somebody has out, what they're using.
So those machines are different machines, but they're in the same location that the earlier machines had been?
Basically.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot less, the older machines took up a lot more space because the filters mm-hmm. were enormous. And then what they called stills, stilling alcohol. They'd still your fluids because you're trying to get keep your fluids clean. Dry cleaning fluid it gets dirty by going through dirty clothes, so you have to clean it. And nowadays, filtration has come a long way by process of spin discs, they're called, to actually still using tonsil powder, which is a form of I don't know, coral from the sea. They crush it, and it helps trap dirts and particles and those kind of things.
And they call it tonsil powder.
Tonsil, and it's mixed with diatomaceous, which is some of the stuff that they mine right here in Nevada that it's kind of like a clay.
It has a lot of different uses,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
So, and then there was an area that you said used to be the drape room. Mm-hmm. And what is that kind of used for now?
Well, basically that's used for producing most of our hotel wardrobe in a, you know, large volume. We do large volume in hotel. They try, you know, your casinos try to pay real cheap to get a lot of work done in a short period of time. Because what they want, what they give you today, they need back tonight. So you're trying to push it through in a rapid motion. And so you need a lot of space to do that. Because there's lots of garments.
Okay. And this is uniforms you're talking about? Okay.
Wardrobe is what the employees wear, yes.
So not performance clothes for anyone performing at casinos?
No, we do. We do some of that too.
Okay.
Absolutely. Sammy Showroom, we do. Used to do quite a bit of that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, a lot of entertainers through the years. I mean, my grandma found $2,000 in Sammy Davis Jr.'s pocket once. So we do performers. You know, I mean, there's, of course, you know, studded gowns and those kind of things, you know, sequin this, sequin that. That's, you know, that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a room that you had talked about that there are these doors that was an explosion-proof room. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, back in the days of the temperatures that your fluids get to can become flammable. So, and whenever you heat up a garment to dry it, you're approaching temperatures that are dangerous. So you have to be careful not to exceed those, and it can happen, you know, one with steam, a stuck valve can get something too hot, or it, like I was saying, a lighter in a pocket can touch a spark, and, you know, metal on metal contact can create sparks and then explosions and those kind of things. So they had to have explosion-proof motors, explosion doors. That's basically a room that's called a vault. It's concrete roof, sides, all the way around. The windows are reinforced with metal, so it's, you know, it's a safe zone.
And there are these very heavy metal doors that are off to the side that aren't covering the door front, but they would be released in case of fire and close that room in.
Correct. They have a burn tab on them that if it melts through the door, seal the room.
It's fascinating. Yeah. And then can you explain what an ozone room is? I'd never heard of that before.
Well, ozone room is basically a room that, it's a machine that's an ozonator that pumps a certain kind of ozone particles, I believe, into the actual garments to mask. I don't think it's a temporary thing. I mean, it's not in my eyes. It's just it masks the actual smoke and or smell of any kind of, impervious, anything that's you know gets in and inundates garments, textiles. You're trying to, you know, remove that for future use, period. So but some things you can't save, some things are just ruined when it smoke hits it. You get you know, burn, of course, when it melts, or if it gets to a certain temperature, you're scarred, your clothes are scarred, and at that point certain things can't be saved. But it's nowadays it's just about trying to save as many garments as possible, because a lot of people are attached to their clothes and they don't like going out and buying new stuff, and then a lot of garments you just can't get anymore. So it's more about trying to keep customers happy and restore their textiles.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned, and I saw that in the early years of the company, I don't know if this was while your family owned it, but there was a Hat Works, and you were pointing out that downstairs was where the hat maker worked.
Yeah, he made hats. He would stretch them, he would sew bands on them, he would form them. He would make them out of, you know, different kinds of materials. I mean, you have, of course, you have beaver to cloth to plaid to tweed. I mean, there's all different kinds of wool styles of hats. And in those days, you know, in the 30s and 40s, everybody wore hats. So it's kind of one of those things that you had to have. And it was kind of like now you have sewing pretty much on site, too. Where they really didn't even have a whole lot of that, but they, you know, nowadays it's kind of requested. I mean, you always have somebody, can you sew a button on? Can you sew this? Can you sew that? Hats, we just still do some. We just don't make them. We don't tailor them. We clean quite a few varieties of them. but it's just not one of those big money makers that we would allow to take up space like that spot that I was showing you. It took up a lot of space, kind of like the drape room took up a lot of space when we used to do drapes, because you would do house folds of drapes, especially in the springtime. It was spring cleaning and drapes were everywhere. Not anymore.
And the trend has just gone away. People just don't use drapes as much.
No, blinds and those kind of things. Window coverings are completely different than what they used to be.
Do you know if that hat maker was operating down there after your grandfather acquired the business?
I believe not.
Okay.
I believe not, because I had pictures of that room being used as a press room after that particular picture.
And then there were other pieces of equipment you were talking about. You got puffer. I don't remember what a puffer was. What was the puffer?
A puffer is a thing that... It has a form on the top where you lay your clothes over it, and you can either stretch your clothes or form your clothes over a styled end. It can look like an arrow, it can look like a shoulder, it can look like what we call a mushroom, and then you form different pieces of clothing around it so that it takes wrinkles out or makes them look appropriate.
Okay. And then you had the collar and cuff machine, and that's just a special kind of pressing for those specific...
Collar, and all it does is press collar and cuff, and then we have another machine downstairs that presses just the sleeves, and then you have another machine that presses just the front and the back of a shirt. Yeah, there's different applications for different garments that, you know, like you were saying, the toppers that just press the top of the pants, and then you have a leg tensioner which just presses the bottom pair of the pants, not just the actual, what we call a legger. This is the one that was standing up downstairs. I probably didn't go over that. Well, if it was running, I could show it to you, but it actually jerks on the bottom of your pants and then blows steam through it, and they come out styled and formed to that actual process.
I just have to admit, it never occurred to me how many different types of equipment would be employed all the time in a plant like this.
And it's not a cheap way to go. A lot of cleaners can't afford to go those kind of routes, you know, but it does affect your time, your production, and you hope to pay for it with, you know, productivity in a, you know, rapid succession.
And you said that there's like a weekly cycle. It's pretty quiet. We're here on a Friday afternoon. What's your weekly cycle like?
Well, we start at 4 a.m, so a lot of things, you know, that's when things are really getting geared up. And by 6 a.m, it's, you know, baskets are moving and people are, you know, nearly running into each other, and clothes are going on all the conveyors and flinging things around. And it's, you know, it gets quite hectic. And it's depending on the flow, especially after a holiday, it's really hectic down there.
Okay. So it's really more about time of day than day of the week, pretty much?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And, well, Friday is the end of the week, but it was, you know, when we have storms like yesterday, it keeps people from coming into the stores. They don't want to drive, so our stores end up being slower.
Right. Well, it really helped a lot. Thank you so much for the tour to kind of look around. And I think we'd love to maybe come in and take some photographs of, you know.
Well, hopefully I'll find those pictures and it would give you more of a detail of more past and history. Because those were really, really neat.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you so much.
Okay.